a celebrity's passing, and the dangers of stroke in younger adults. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, how the tragic death of star Luke Perry serves as a medical warning to millions of us. The signs and symptoms of stroke and what you need to know. Join the conversation right now at 549-2937. Then later, we'll talk to a First Coast author who gave up something kind of unusual for Lent. You won't believe what it is. That's coming up too. But first this hour, he was a Hollywood heartthrob who charmed two different generations of fans. Actor Luke Perry first shot to fame on the massive 90s hit Beverly Hills 90210.
My name's Brandon Walsh.
Brandon Walsh. Scotch or Irish?
Both, actually. By way of Minnesota. Listen, what you did to those two Nimrods back there was great.
Yeah, well, I just don't believe in winning through intimidation. Unless, of course, I'm doing the intimidating.
Are you hungry? I get next period off. We go grab a bite.
Yeah, let's do lunch.
That was Perry with his co-star Jason Priestley. More recently, he won over a brand new audience of younger fans, playing the role of a dad on the CW hit Riverdale.
Fred Andrews. F.P. Jones. What can I do for you fellas?
Can I let you know that my son is home permanently?
He is? Well, that's just great, Fred.
Cut the crap, Hiram. We all know you have it out for his kid.
I'll stop you right there. I've never wished any harm to either of your sons.
Hiram, if you harm a hair on Archie's head, I will kill you. Make no mistake about it, and I will be at peace with whatever the consequences of that are.
So the news that 52-year-old Perry died Monday of a massive stroke really gutted millions of Americans. They were stunned that someone still seemingly so healthy and vibrant with decades ahead of him could suddenly be gone. But the truth is the risk of stroke can be particularly dangerous for middle-aged adults. Risk factors include high blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking, obesity, and diabetes. One in three American adults has at least one of these conditions or habits. That's a lot of us. So we're beginning the hour this morning with a closer look at the dangers of stroke and what you need to do to stay healthy to avoid those risk factors. Here with more, Dr. Jason Siegel, neurologist with Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
And 42-year-old stroke survivor, Urvashi Patel. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Not 43 yet.
Not yet.
You will be next month. And what are your thoughts and memories about Luke Perry? And how did you feel hearing that news that he died of a stroke? Are you about that age? I am. It shocked me. What are your questions about the signs and symptoms of stroke? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax and join the conversation on Facebook as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. All right, Dr. Siegel, this isn't news to you, but it was certainly shocking to so many Americans. When a celebrity dies, there's always a pause in the culture. People are shocked when it's someone who seemed to go before their time. And that I think that's how so many people felt about this particular celebrity. But stroke is not something that just affects older adults, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we do know that the risk of stroke goes up considerably after the age of 65. We also know that in that population, the risk and mortality of stroke that is actually going down over the last several years. What we've been noticing, though, in larger group studies is that the risk of stroke in younger people, even as young as the 20s, 20s, 30s, 40s, is going up. And much of that is due to the same risk factors that you mentioned in the older population, high blood pressure especially, but high cholesterol, diabetes, and blood sugar problems, smoking, and tobacco use for sure, living kind of a sedentary lifestyle, not optimal weight management. These are things that are being, or at least not being improved in the younger population, if not worsening, and accounting for many, many patients who are younger than the typical, you know, age we think about for people who have stroke who are experiencing that kind of thing. Yeah.
And can people with seemingly no risk factors suffer a stroke? Someone that seemed healthy and fit, like a Hollywood star?
Yeah. It's always very tough to know, obviously. I don't want to comment on the specifics of Mr. Perry. It's obviously very, very, very sad. But, you know, I can tell you as somebody in their 30s that many of my friends are not going to the doctor. So many of these risk factors, maybe somebody has, but they just don't know about it. When we get older, we start going to the physicians, you know, yearly, and we start actually identifying these risk factors. But unless you're, you know for sure, you do or do not have these risk factors, it's good to get them checked out.
You know, we were looking at a list of other celebrities that seem to die too young of a stroke. It's a long list. Ryle Julia, the actor, Kirby Puckett, the athlete, Tim Russert, formerly of Meet the Press, all died in their 50s of a stroke. And so younger stroke survivors have a lot to share about their experiences, too, including 42-year-old Urvashi Patel of Jacksonville. And it's good to have you here this morning. Good morning to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so a couple of years ago, you had a headache. Is that how your experience with stroke started?
Correct. It was a really bad headache. So, I mean, I've had some hangovers in my life, but this was way worse. And it just kept getting worse. Fortunately, I was at work and I started seeing some other symptoms. So I went to go see the nurse.
What else did you notice?
I had some tingly feelings in my fingers. And by the time I got to see the nurse, the paralysis was starting to set in on my arm and hand. So she did think that it was a stroke and called an ambulance, and I headed over to the Mayo Clinic.
They rushed you there right away, which made all the difference, didn't
Correct.
It? The quickness of it.
Yes. Timing is everything with a stroke.
Okay, so they found a blockage in your artery. You underwent surgery. You actually suffered complete paralysis on your left side and loss of some vision, but you slowly recovered. Is that right?
Correct. I had complete paralysis on the left side, but today, very little impact. It's just my toes now, which is 18 months later, which is amazing. And it's all because I got to the hospital very quickly.
And what did they think caused your stroke?
Still unknown.
Still
unknown.
I didn't
have any of those factors you listed at the beginning. I mean, I like to say I'm like a Luke Perry, but I'm not really, you know, no superstar. But, you know, overall healthy, fit, no diabetes, no family history, pretty skinny. But, you know, this happens. Those factors definitely contribute, but it could happen to a healthy person too.
Yeah, you look like the last person I would ever expect to be hit by a stroke. You look healthy, you're fit.
Thanks.
And but, yeah, so it's the randomness of it, I think, that's frightening to so many people.
Correct. But with a stroke, it's timing. So if you see the symptoms, and more importantly, if you see the symptoms in anybody else, get them to the hospital.
Dr. Siegel, that is what people in your business say is there's this golden hour when someone like you can make a difference for a patient. Beyond that, it might be too late, isn't it?
Yeah, we say time is brain. We use an acronym called FAST, F-A-S-T, standing for facial weakness, arm weakness, slurred speech or loss of speech, and then T for timing. And that's helpful from our colleagues over the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, which works closely with us at Mayo. We have a good partnership there. But the overarching theme is it's not just face, arm, and speech. That's a very common presentation. But it's, if you quickly and abruptly lose a neurological function, if it's weakness, blindness, numbness, you can't walk, you can't talk, if it's any of those things, if you're unable to do something quickly that you were, you know, a minute before, you need to seek medical attention. And we talk about this. It's very heartbreaking and very sad and even kind of frustrating. You know, many people, this kind of thing happens to, they get scared, too scared to go see the doctor. They go, we hear this all the time. I want to go sleep it off. You know, I got weak in my arm. I didn't know. I just want to go sleep it off. I fear it's going to be better. By that time, it's too late to do anything. Sometimes we have medicine that we can give to try to break up a blockage in an artery, kind of break up the clot in the pipe. If we give it too late, it can cause, you know, that pipe to burst and you can start bleeding, and that could be even worse than the initial stroke. So getting to the hospital, getting to a stroke center is critically important. We always promote and recommend calling 911. If you have any doubt, they'll bring you to the back door. They let us know you're on your way. We're all there as a nice team getting ready to take care of you.
The mayor of St. Augustine, Nancy Shaver, also recently suffered a stroke, and she had to step down from her position leading the city of St. Augustine. They've chosen a new mayor, and we hope to interview him sometime soon. So this has recently also affected a local public official. And so what are your questions about stroke as we talk with Mayo Clinic and a stroke survivor? 549-2937. Give us a call. Gab is on the south side. Hi, Gab. Good morning to you.
Hello. Yeah, this is Gabe. Thanks for taking my call, Melissa.
Typo here on the screen.
I just wanted to remind your listeners that the guidelines changed. A lot of them probably know about it for blood pressure, which is the biggest driver for strokes. So last year in 2018, the American College of Cardiology, American Heart Association, and nine other major organizations endorsed the guidelines where the blood pressure now, if it's higher than 130 over 80, you have high blood pressure. Previously, we used to use the 140 over 90, which a lot of people are used to. So if it's higher than 130 over 80, you have high blood pressure. And this is based on data from a lot of studies, but the biggest one came out in 2017 called the SPRINT trial, where they actually took 9,000 patients and then they followed them. And they actually realized that after years, it was actually 3 years, there was a difference in outcomes in patients that actually targeted blood pressure around 120, you know, for the systolic. Mm. So the lower, the better. And many patients now actually do have high blood pressure. So when you go to your doctor, when you go to your healthcare provider, if it's over the 130 over 80, just make sure they treat it, because there are differences in outcomes.
Yeah, Gabe, thanks for all of those points. Dr. Siegel, blood pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, blood pressure and tobacco use are probably the two most modifiable things you can do to prevent strokes. Gabe was saying that that new cutoff is very important. Again, many people probably around there living in the systolics 130s, 140s think it's fine. Maybe they know people are much, much higher. They say, well, compared to them, it's, you know, I'm in a good place. We know, again, even in your 20s, having high blood pressure above 120, above 130s, significantly increases your risk of stroke. Of course, that goes up in your 30s and 40s as well. Having more than one of these risk factors significantly increases your risk of stroke as a young person. So again, if you don't know, if you're worried, if you go to the pharmacy and you check your blood pressure and the cuff there and you're like, wow, man, it looks a little high, go get it checked out by a professional. They can get you on the right lifestyle path, the right medications, if that's what that's needed.
Irvishi, did you have high blood pressure when you suffered your stroke?
No, mine runs low.
So there was no warning sign for you.
No,
that's what's
no.
So terrifying about this. And I also read that with Luke Perry, that this is a hidden danger in younger adults having a stroke. That you can suffer brain swelling after a stroke. Much older adults, their brain shrinks as they get older. But with a middle-aged American whose brain swells after a stroke, that can actually exacerbate the peril.
That's
Is that
right.
true?
Yeah. I also say that in young people, yeah, there are a couple interesting caveats we don't see in the older patients. One is, you know, yeah, we're talking about all these traditional risk factors. Young people can be prone to some other things as well. One of them is called arterial dissection. And it doesn't mean that you're dissecting open a vessel and tearing it open with a knife like an anatomy table. But your arteries and your blood vessels are kind of like sleeves of a coat jacket. There's an inner lining and an outer lining. Sometimes those linings separate, and that's called a dissection. And that can make the blood vessel narrow, clot forming, and that's a unique thing, not as common as many of these other risk factors, but something that we always look for in younger patients. So that's number one. We always look for other, you know, unique causes in younger patients other than the traditional risk factors. And the other thing, as you mentioned, is this swelling that happens. We know anytime you injure the brain, and it's just like twisting your ankle or hurting your knee, it swells up. Well, unfortunately, Your brain is inside a very hard box called your skull. And so as it swells, it starts putting pressure on other parts of your brain or on your brain stem and makes it harder to treat the part of your brain that was injured by the stroke. And yes, as we get older, our brains tend to shrink. So there's more room inside the skull for swelling. Younger people, unfortunately, don't have that in their favor.
Stroke is most common in adults age 65 or older, but the stroke rate among younger adults is steadily increasing. The American Heart Association, American Stroke Association wants you to know all the risks and warning signs of stroke, the number five cause of death and a leading cause of disability in the United States. Know your risk factors. Control your blood pressure. Get exercise. Know your cholesterol numbers. Don't smoke. Those are things you can all do to control your risk of stroke. It's 549-2937. Pierce is in Jacksonville. Hi, Pierce. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I wanted to call because I'm a young, fit person. I say I'm young. I'm 49, but I'm a lifelong surfer. People would think that I probably look 35. I surf hurricanes. I am very fit, never had any problems, and I recently suffered four strokes.
Oh, my gosh.
We had two of them without knowing what they were at home, and a bad headache caused me to actually go to the hospital, and then actually had two more in the hospital after on medication from turning my head around, looking at the blood pressure monitors behind me. I'm not overweight. I was a smoker, but they said that had nothing to do with it. My blood pressure was slightly elevated, has been for a while, but not enough to be on any medication or anything. And they think, which I'm in the same boat as the previous caller, they're not really sure what happened, but they think it's the main artery in the back of my neck. Just some little flakes from that artery came off and went into my brain and caused me to have a stroke. The first two strokes weren't bad enough for me to even go to the hospital. It's just I started having headaches afterwards, like two days afterwards, and that's why I went in. But then after I'd been in the hospital for 4 days, I had two more. And how I knew I had them, my eyes went from side to side.
Really?
Uncontrollably. Yeah. Eyes went from side to side uncontrollably. I can walk fine like I could skateboard at this moment, even after having four strokes, no problems. But my balance was off a little bit. I lost a little bit of peripheral vision was the only thing that's really happened to me. I would say I'm probably 95% of what I was prior to the strokes, but it takes a mental toll on you. And that's the main thing that for me, is I'm just constantly worried that it's going to happen again.
Yeah, I'm sure. Part. Well, Pierce, I'm so sorry, and I'm so glad you survived. And I thank you so much for sharing that with all of us.
No problem at all. No problem.
Okay, Irvashi, are you afraid of that too, of a recurrence?
Yes, there's always that fear, but I mean, just go back to the doctors.
Yeah. Irvashi's done a lot of rehab, Dr. Siegel. People that are survivors are obviously very focused on this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, not all strokes are equal in terms of where they are, how big they are, what part of your brains they affect. Again, we're doing better at stroke survivability, but that means there are many more people out there who are living not quite like they were. And sometimes that just means, you know you're not yourself. That if you were to meet a complete stranger, they would think you're a normal, you know, high-functioning human being, but you know there's something not right. For some people, that is, you know, years later, still trying to learn how to walk, still trying to learn how to talk again. So I'm very happy to hear that that Pierce is back on the board and he's doing the things he loves. And that's fantastic. It's always a road. We tell all of our stroke patients when they come in, this is a story and you're the writer. Nothing's going to, be solved necessarily in the next couple of days. There's going to be rehab. There's going to be physical, occupational, and speech rehab. And that we're in this, for the long haul, and this is going to take some time. And many times patients, like I said, can get back very close to where they were before.
We tend to think of this as a problem that affects men. I think the stereotype we have in our head is that we put it in the same bucket as a heart attack. But I know a number of women around town who've been affected by strokes, younger women. A friend of mine named Denise Reagan dealt with this recently. And isn't it true that women are more likely to suffer a stroke than men overall?
Yeah, again, we're talking about a lot of the modifiable risk factors. Some of the things you cannot necessarily change are, yes, being a woman.
And why are women more susceptible?
Usually that's a postmenopausal type situation. It's a hormonal change. We know that also young women who are on oral birth control and smoke are at a very high risk, much higher risk of getting a stroke than young women who don't partake in those two things together. You know, having a family history of stroke, sometimes it's in the genes, unfortunately, and there's not a lot you can do about that, but you can do what you can try to do.
Even if you weren't a fan of Beverly Hills 90210 or Riverdale, you probably heard about the death of actor Luke Perry this week. It has reminded millions of Americans to be mindful of the signs and symptoms of stroke. Whether or not you're a senior citizen, Perry was 52. 549-2937. Peggy is in Arlington. Hi, Peggy. Good morning.
Good morning to you. This is a really important topic. My concern is we have a lot of emergency centers that have opened up around the city, and you're talking about stroke centers. What if you go to one of these and it's not a stroke center? How do you identify your local stroke center?
Great question, Peggy. Thank you for that.
Yeah, fantastic. So, first, I'll say if you call 911, they know who all the stroke centers are. The EMS knows where to take you to the closest comprehensive stroke center. If you, for whatever reason, don't call 911, don't go by ambulance, as far as I know, the local standalone ERs, acute and critical care centers that you can walk in off the street, they are also aware of the comprehensive stroke center, and they will contact us and transport as appropriate. So, again, that's one of the reasons why we promote just calling 911, get the ambulance over to you. They know where to take you fastest and quickest.
You're thinking, oh, I must be imagining this, I think sometimes people don't want to be embarrassed and they don't want to call for help and then not need it. Is it better to risk being embarrassed?
Listen, this is what we do for a living. This is what we like to do. And I've talked to many paramedics and EMTs as well. And boy, they have no problem assessing you and taking you to some place if it means this could save you, you know, big problems down the road.
So many calls about this. Meanwhile, let's go to Ed in Jacksonville. Hi, Ed. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I just had a question about the when you were talking about the blood pressure. Like, I'm in my 70s, and I was wondering, what is the norm? Because I've had a couple of doctors say one thing, then one say another. And I was wondering, what is the normal blood pressure for people in my age bracket?
Right. And you're 78?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so what's a normal blood pressure for Ed?
Normal and appropriate are probably two different things. I don't know exactly what normal would be, but even the appropriate for you, Ed, is going to be, in general, less than 130 over less than 80. Now, I can tell you that is the general recommendation. Though if you have a primary care physician, there may be other reasons why your blood pressure goals could be lower, sometimes higher, but probably lower. So I don't want to comment specifically on what your personal goal should be, but more in generalities. But I would say probably your question of what is normal is probably much, much higher is what most people out there have, though, again, putting them at risk for a lot of the cardiovascular and cerebrovascular disease.
And multiple news outlets are reporting this morning that a widespread recall of common blood pressure and heart failure medications has been expanded to include a class of drugs containing losartan. That is a potential human carcinogen. And so if you are on blood pressure medication, check and make sure that you're not taking any meds that contain losartan. There's also an investigation into a class of drugs known as ARBs, angiotensin receptor blockers. These are also used to treat high blood pressure. So if you are taking blood pressure medication, check into this today, because this is just being reported this morning. Meanwhile, lots of calls about stroke. 549-2937. Jane is on the west side. Hi, Jane. Good morning.
Hey, how are you? I'm in my mid-40s, and I have I get headaches from time to time, specifically when I work out. And I feel my gut tells me it has something to do with the blood vessels in my head. I get lots of pressure, and I was just intrigued by what Dr. Siegel was saying about the dissection. My dad did die of diabetes. Ironically, he got a really bad headache. And so, like I said, I've done MRIs, I've done blood work, but everything comes back two thumbs up. So is there an additional specific test that I can get?
Yeah, absolutely. We're getting emails about that too. Is there a test available to screen for blockages? Thanks for that, Jane.
Yeah, very good. So, I'll start with the headaches and dissection. Again, can vary. I don't want to speak specifically on individuals, but in general, what we hear is what we describe as a thunderclap headache. By that, I mean a headache that goes from 0 to 10 in an order of seconds. Worst headache of my life. Sometimes it's involving the neck or one side behind the eye, something like that. But not always. In terms of the tests that can be done to work that up and figure out if there are blockages, are there dissections, et cetera, we do different kinds of angiography. So CT angiograms or MRI angiograms, these are just fancy radiographic studies that look at the blood vessels themselves. So an MRI looks at the brain tissue, an MR angiogram looks at the blood vessels. That is not something we typically use to screen people off the street, just like you get, your yearly labs. We usually don't just get yearly MRAs on people without a reason. But if there is a concern of an arterial dissection, or if we think based on somebody's history or symptoms that they may have a blockage that is not completely blocking an artery, but coming close to that, and they might be having symptoms, we'll use the same technology to look at the caliber of the blood vessels. Yes.
Irvashi, that's how your stroke started, with a bad headache.
Correct.
And did it feel different from a regular headache?
It was just like the doctor described. It went from 0 to 10 very quickly. So usually when you have a headache, it kind of increases, feels like it's happening really quickly, but it's more gradual. Mm-hmm. This went from no pain to, oh my gosh.
So painful you couldn't function.
It was really difficult.
Do anything,
yes.
Yeah.
I had my head in my hands and my coworker was like, what's wrong?
So that's when you knew something's wrong.
I knew something was wrong, yeah.
If you go to the website strokeassociation.org, you can learn more about the signs and symptoms of stroke and how to prevent stroke. And remember that acronym of FAST, F-A-S-T. You might just save a life from stroke. Is your face drooping? Is one side numb? Is one arm weak or numb? Arm weakness. S for speech. Is your speech slurred? Then you get to T, time to call 911. Face, arm, speech, call 911. That's the FAST acronym. Chuck at the Beaches. Hi, Chuck. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm fine. I have a question with depression and anxiety, et cetera. I'm 67 years old. I only take one med, which is a low dose for high blood pressure. I'm a gym junkie. I work out. I'm got a great walk-around weight. No problems there. Been to the doctor, checked everything out. But I work, and this is my question, I work 50 to 60 hours a week. I have two jobs, and I come home. I have to take care of everything at home. And I don't know if any of you are in your 60s yet, but the older you get, the more your life changes, the more different types of anxieties and different types of depressions that you have. So my question is, and you can't do anything about your blood pressure to a certain point. You can work, and you can get it, but it's still going to be somewhat high. My question is, does bad dreams in the morning, depression, anxiety, I call it white coat, when your blood pressure goes up, et cetera, do those kinds of things affect you? And I've heard something about taking aspirin when you think you're having it, et cetera.
Right. That, yeah, I was going to ask you about that, too. Thank you for that.
So for the points on the, okay, the depression, the anxiety, the stress, you know, indirectly, yeah, those are things that do tend to go along with high blood pressure. They tend to go relate to poor diet, sedentary lifestyle. And we do kind of hear this too. I'm on my feet all day. And that's very good. That's an active person, but your body kind of equilibrates to that. So many people are on their feet all day. They go home. They just, you know, crash on the couch for 5 hours before they go to bed. Sounds like Chuck's a gym junkie, so that might not be him, which is good. But kind of having the underlying, you know, stress, does stuff to, again, your hormonally, adrenaline, things like that, that can, change blood pressure. And, you know, blood pressure is an interesting thing because, you know, as Chuck was kind of mentioning, he has maybe a white coat syndrome. So when he goes and sees the doctor in the white coat, the blood pressure goes up, right? So,
that can't make you feel good, Dr. Siegel. Oh, no. Oh God, the man in the white coat is coming towards me.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yep.
What about the aspirin question?
So we don't recommend doing that. We
you
recommend
don't.
go to get to the stroke center.
Let's take one more call. It's James on the north side. Hi, James. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing this morning? Got a question for you. I went to the doctor. I'm 55 years old, and he went through all the risks and stuff about high blood pressure. My pressure is high. I mean, I'm not overweight. He did the blood test. Everything was green across the board. He says the only thing we got is just your pressure. And I asked him, I said, why do I have high blood pressure? I mean, I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I exercise, and everything green across the board. He told me, says that science doesn't know why it's like that, because I'm Native American. He says scientist doesn't know. He says, you know, we can only just control it. He said, you can be in the best shape of your life, and for some reason, some people have high blood pressure and some people don't.
Yeah.
Comment on that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Isn't it genetics too? There's a mystery, but it's a genetic one.
Yeah, that's true. And we don't know if
you can inherit it.
Yeah. So family history is very important with that. And you can't change that as much as some people would maybe like to change their family. You can't change that part of your family. And, you know, we don't know by the time, you know, again, we're checking people, even, you know, teenagers, 20s, 30s, 40s for high blood pressure, what maybe has been done to the blood vessels leading up to that point, even as children. I don't want to, you know, get too far into, you know, speculation about children's blood pressure and stuff like that. That's a little bit out of my scope. But, you know, when we start checking blood pressure routinely more in our, you know, second or third, fourth decades, there might have been some, you know, damage and things we've done as even younger people to have set up for, you know, lifelong of high blood pressure and blood vessels not reacting the way they're supposed to. So, you know, it's frustrating, I think, for many people. I'll say myself included, who's kind of going down this blood pressure road right now. And I ran last night. I ran the night before. I'm, you know, trying to watch my weight. But boy, I mean, every time I check my pressure, I'm like, man, it's a little higher than I want it to be. And sometimes you just maybe have to accept some of that stuff.
That's right. Okay, Irvashi Patel, you continue to work hard at your rehabilitation sessions as a stroke survivor and also at the Neuro Recovery Center. Is that right?
Actually, I'm no longer going to the Neuro Recovery Center, but I went there for many months, and it was an amazing place that Brooks has. My kids called it the gym for people with brain injuries, and it literally is. They had so many equipment, both for physical recovery, speech, as well as you had that support. Everybody there was working on something. So the place is phenomenal. If anybody needs a place to go, and the way the grants are set up, it's cost effective to become a member, and then you get physical therapy included. Wonderful place. I've graduated from there, which is wonderful, and now I just go to yoga, which is
reducing stress. And,
yes, it takes care of everything, mind, body, spirit. So wonderful for me. But to your earlier comment about being embarrassed to go to the emergency room, I'd rather be alive and embarrassed than not be here.
That's
if nothing else, take that away.
That's right. Great advice from both of you today and potentially life-saving information about stroke. So thank you, Dr. Jason Siegel of Mayo Clinic. Thanks to the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and stroke survivor Urvashi Patel, who will see her 43rd birthday next month. So that's great news, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Keep listening.
Years ago, a psychologist had some bizarre ideas for settling child custody battles.
An option, and I'm very serious about this, is to take the kid and put him in jail.
And his theories are still turning kids' lives upside down.
I kind of lost out on my childhood. I lost out on my father. I lost out on my brother being there. And they did that to me.
Bitter Custody, on the next Reveal.
Saturday at 3 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Christina, what's on the front page of today's Times Union?
At the top of the page, Florida lawmakers made...
Around the country, volunteers are reading local newspapers to people with vision loss or print disabilities. Did you know WJCT has this service? On a special radio we provide, you'll get the Florida Times Union every day. Learn more at wjct.org/radio reading. With help from sponsors like Florida Eye Specialists, radio reading gives voice to the printed word.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, Yellow House, which exhibits art focused on social change, is re-upping its provocative Set the Table exhibition. This new exhibit is called Reset the Table, and it features multiple artists addressing issues of immigration, race, gender equality, LGBTQ rights, and more. Here with more, Hope McMath, founder and director of Yellow House, and artist Malath Alarnosi, whose work is featured in the exhibition. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Okay, so you've really made a splash, Hope, with Yellow House, this beautiful old yellow house in Riverside that focuses on art that foments social change. Tell us about Reset the Table. What's this all about?
So we did our first Reset the Table exhibition about this time last year, and it was actually an idea that I co-curated with students at University of North Florida. Which is it's sort of the first part of resetting the table, this idea of sharing power and not having stories being told by somebody who's sort of in this, quote, expert position. And the concept behind it is to really explore this idea of who is at the proverbial table mm-hmm. and who isn't. Where are people included? Where do people feel excluded? And really having that conversation through the visual and literary arts.
Yeah, there's a saying, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
That's right. That's right.
So Malath, you're an Iraqi immigrant and you use art to tell the stories of refugee women and mm-hmm. their struggles creating a new home in this country. Your work is featured in this exhibit. What will we see?
My work is portray my thoughts and feelings about truth, peace, equality, and the lives of women. And also I work in with a variety of artist mediums, including acrylic, watercolor, painting, and pieces of thread and fabric. So my work frontally portrays two traditional ways in lives of Middle East folklore and also stories of refugees, women's feeling about missing my homeland, as well as challenges and success of immigration in the United States. So it's really helped me and helped other women to express their feeling, talking about who they are, you know.
Yeah.
And the exhibition is like not just is my art and also is a photography for women and refugees and immigrant women from One Heart Jacks group.
So people that come to see this exhibit will really get a powerful window into the immigrant experience. And then, but then also there's other work featured, mm-hmm. Hope. There are a lot of interesting stories that you tell here.
There are. And one of the interesting things is that each of these artists represents their own communities. And none of these artists actually knew each other before this exhibition. So this is also about creating new communities, even within the creative community. So we have people like Tracy Mims, who's one of our great artists in this community, who is truly brilliant when it comes to pencil to paper. And she does self-portraiture that really deals with her identity as a Black woman and her connections to a history that she does not want us to forget. And she's actually sharing space with two young Black female artists, one in college and one actually in high school. So part of what we try to do with this show is also blur the lines between who we see has value as far as having their art on the wall. You know, what is the difference between an emerging artist and experienced artist? So we have artists in the show from age 15 to age 80. And so we deal very openly and honestly with issues of race, with gender. We have an artist, Richter Ricardo, who is a young artist from UNF, came here from Cuba, and his work deals very specifically with his experience as an immigrant to this country, and also as a gay man moving through this community that we call Jacksonville. We've got a woman in the exhibition, Sister Elizabeth Fiordi, who is an elder in our community who lost her sight about 25 years ago and uses art as a tool for building community for herself and other women who have lost their sight. So when we say we're trying to reset the table with an exhibition like this, like we sort of really mean it. And there's actually a table in the exhibition that was set by Malath and the other women in the One Heart Jacks group. Mm-hmm. And they are inviting us to their table to learn about their home cultures of Syria and Burma and Iran and Iraq and Cuba. And so we get to smell their foods and see their personal objects. And really, it's an exhibition where we're invited into seeing all of these people.
And Malath, it's up for several more weeks, so people can come and experience this.
Yes, they can come and they can see, they can meet me as an artist and meet other ladies who they are already in the photography in the wall. So, and express the One Heart Jacks groups and what they do there. It's like, this group is supporting immigrant and refugee women in Jacksonville, Florida, and it's encouraging artist creativity, fostering social integration, and promoting income independence for women.
Very cool. That's One Heart Jacks, and it's Yellow House. Go to yellowhouseart.org for more about Reset the Table. Go see the exhibit. Hope McMath, founder and director, and artist Malath Alarnosi, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And what are you giving up for Lent? Maybe nothing. Well, First Coast author Casey Main gave up men and wrote a book about it. We'll explain next.
High Tide Burrito Company, local since 2009, caters to hungry employees and bosses with fresh, made-from-scratch Mexican food for lunch or parties. No more same old. Menu and ordering at HighTideBurrito.com.
UF Health North on Max Leggett Parkway is the region's newest hospital and outpatient medical center, featuring all private rooms, 12 labor and delivery suites, full imaging, surgical services, and 24-hour emergency care. More at north.ufhealthjacks.org.
A scandalous marriage next time on The World.
His family said I may have performed some black magic to make him fall for me.
50 years ago, Indira fell in love with a fellow med student in India. His family's from a higher caste.
I told them, listen, I love her. I want to marry her. You may not like it. I'm sorry.
Married across caste lines on The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
A new flood control system in a New Jersey town could make a big difference for residents.
Without flood control, it was only the next natural disaster before you were wiped out.
Now developers are pouring in, and many worry that could mean low-income Latino residents will be priced out. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Inside each of us, there's a story to tell. Human bones hold many secrets to our evolutionary past, and they feed our cultural fascination with the afterlife. How would getting to know our skeletal selves help us better understand our behaviors and abilities? All About the Bones, that's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, Lent starts today. Are you giving something up for the holiday, the notation of faith? Well, author Casey Main decided to give something up for Lent, men. And she wrote about it in her book called I Gave Up Men for Lent. Casey Main joins us now with more about this. And good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. This is a funny title, but it's a serious subject. You really kind of tell your story and your whole kind of search for meaning. So tell us what's inside the book.
Yeah, so on the basic level, the book chronicles the 40-ish days of Lent a couple years ago when I did really give up men. And I also threw in a couple other things in there. I added social media, hard liquor and sweets.
So, all the good stuff.
Yeah. And what I said was they were all the double-edged swords in my life, things that caused me both pleasure and pain.
Yeah.
So I gave all that up. Really, it was almost a joke decision at the time. I really didn't expect a lot to come out of it. But what I've since realized is for me, all those things were really just distractions. So they kept my focus on external things instead of internal and really thinking about my life and my happiness. And so when I removed them, I very unexpectedly went on this like journey of self-reflection where I thought back through all the major relationships in my life, all the major decisions in my life. There's a lot of family dynamics in there. And so really the bigger theme of the book is looking at your life and trying to figure out, are you living your life, or how much have you allowed other people's expectations or, you know, societal norms kind of steer you in a direction that maybe doesn't feel 100% right for you?
That's good. And isn't that sort of the idea of Lent, too, in a way, to sort of take a time out from things to reflect?
It is, yes. Yeah. And I will admit, I'm not the greatest Catholic, and my mother hates it when I say that. But in doing a little bit of research, actually, for an article I just published about Lent, yes, it is a time to really reflect on your own life and kind of slow things down. And that's all, you know, in honor of Jesus and his life and his suffering, you know, within the Catholic religion. But yeah, I think for anybody, despite your religious or spiritual beliefs or lack thereof, Lent or any kind of set time period can be a great just reason to step back, kind of remove some of the distractions and noise in your life and really spend some time in self-reflection.
So many devout Christians not only give something up for Lent, they actually fast. They take it really seriously. You kind of took a humorous tack on this.
I did. So yeah, I guess I did fast.
Yeah. So what's the reaction been?
It's been very positive. I've had a lot of people reach out to me and just say that the book is very relatable. I'm very honest in it and very raw, almost to the point where some parts might be uncomfortable to read because really, essentially, it's a journal. I've published my journal throughout Lent. And when I was writing it, I made a very conscious effort to not filter anything, to just say exactly what I was thinking, exactly what I was feeling, and exactly what happened, and not try and, you know, spare anyone's feelings or hold anything back in fear of rejection. So I think that level of honesty is really resonating with a lot of people.
Now, Lent lasts about 40 days. What did you do at the end of the 40 days?
Oh, I was exhausted. So I...
From all that denial.
All that denial and all that thinking, honestly, it's not easy to really think back through your life and in a very honest way. It can be emotionally draining. So I think that Monday after Easter, I believe I even called out of work and I just slept. But it was really, I realized that process was just the beginning, because I had realized a lot of things about my life and what I wanted out of it and what I wanted to change. And so after all that reflecting and realizing it was like, oh man, okay, now it's time to make these changes. So it's
what
really
have you changed?
Well, so my entire career, obviously. So I left, and I had a very, very successful career in the corporate world. And I left that the end of last year to really go all in on the book. And I've really just, a lot of the changes haven't been so much external, but more internal in terms of really just making the decisions I want to make, even if they aren't understood or accepted by other people, and even people that I'm very close to. I'm very close to my family. I'm very close to my friends. And with that comes a lot of opinions. And I've just learned to listen to kind of my gut more and stand stronger in how I want to live my life.
Very cool. And I Gave Up Men for Lent, Casey's book, is now available at one of our partners, San Marco Books and More in the San Marco Square, and The Bookmark out at the beaches.
Yes.
So pick it up there and go to Casey's website, kaciemaine.com, K-A-C-I-E, maine.com. Kudos to you.
Thank you.
And are you giving up anything for this Lenten season that starts today?
Yes. So this year I am giving up looking at my phone while I'm driving. So
that's a good one.
That's not just texting. Obviously, that's a bad one, but also even just checking emails at stoplights. And then I am giving up the words can't and don't. And my thought behind that is I'm trying to give up limiting beliefs, and I'm hoping those trigger words will help me identify when I'm thinking that way.
Something we could all try.
Yes.
Thanks, Casey.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz, and Michelle Corum is our director. Don't give up public media, because 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.